Danny, thank you so much for having me back. And it's a joy to be back. And I believe you put a good spell, on the journey of Boy Swallows Universe about 2 years ago. And I've never, ever forgotten how kind and generous you were to have me on early on, when Trent Dalton and the world of literary fiction were pretty strange to each other. And I was very touched that you took the time of day, and it's so cool that you took the time of day again.
I feel like I'm part of the Words and Nerds family. You guys are so amazing and lovely, and such a family of amazing literary lovers and creators and people who advocate.
Oh, thanks so much for your questions, engaging with the novel, and for everything you're doing. I know the podcast is hugely, hugely loved, so you're a gem.
I think it's awesome the work that you do. You know, we're out there in this pool of like however many writers there are in this country, and we're all trying to get our book to the surface. Podcasts like this enable us to do that, and also to talk about our craft.
Danny, you're a gift from heaven.
I love that you're such a great supporter and advocate for not only kids' books, but adult novels too. I love your interviews across the board.
Kudos to you, Danny, for getting everyone to relax so much that they open up and tell you such interesting things for the benefit of your listeners. So,
thanks, Jack.
Yeah, well
That's
done.
That's so true. Oh my gosh, I just told you all these things that I've never talked about before. I could maybe edit that bit out. I could do this, and I was just so comfortable that I was like, all this stuff.
It's a special knack. Who wouldn't want to celebrate this fabulous podcast?
Thank you for listening to the Words and Nerds podcast. On this podcast, we chat about books, the writing process, and how literature has the power to change the world. I'm your host, Danny V.
I'm super excited to welcome Gabrielle Tozer back to the podcast.
Author of Picture Book, Peas and Quiet, children's novel, Melody Trumpet, which I just adored, and four YA novels, The Intern, which won the State Library Victoria's 2015 Gold Inky Award, Faking It and Remind Me How This Ends. And today we're going to talk about Can't Say It Went to Plan, which is probably indicative of our lives as well, Gab. So how are you, and welcome back?
Oh, thanks for having me. I feel lucky to be a returner.
I love speaking to return guests, because I think you've already sort of got that, you know, that conversation going. And so when I saw you had this beautiful book out, which I loved, and I love the cover so much, I thought I have to try and speak to Gab again. So it was a bit tricky, because I know you put on Insta that you were 300 weeks pregnant. And so when I went, you're looking very gorgeous, by the way, very glamorous. And so when I was approaching, you know, your publicist, they were like, oh, the dates are a bit tricky. So I said, oh, I'll take what I can get, because otherwise we might have been doing this from a hospital ward, which probably not what you want to be doing. You probably have more important things to do.
Not ideal. Look, anything for you, Danny. I would have made it work. I would have made it work.
Now, you, this beautiful book, Can't Say It Went to Plan, before we start just chatting about everything, and, you know, as we do, we'll probably go on many tangents, as I know we did even before we started recording. Can you give us an elevator pitch as to what this beautiful book is about?
Basically, Can't Say It Went to Plan is a young adult novel that goes down in a week for three strangers, and it's a week that they will never forget. Anything that could go wrong does go wrong. And there's a bit of a butterfly effect element too, where their lives kind of gently are intertwined and have rub-on effects on each other. And yeah, it's a real roller coaster ride of emotions for these poor characters. I put them through it.
It is, but you know, I was reading it and thinking when I was a teenager, I was this dramatic. So I think you really captured teenage life really well.
Oh, thank you. I'm really, really proud of this book in a way, because there's three main characters, all female. Very different from different worlds, different backgrounds, different experiences, and each grappling with their own different crisis, some of them more serious than others. And I don't know, there's elements of me scattered throughout, as always. You just can't resist putting a little bit in there. But there's some storylines in there that I suppose I'm really happy that I could include, maybe as a little throwback for my teen self, you know, like at the time you wish you had that that for yourself back when you were 17 years old?
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you that because I know you write, you know, YA. And I was thinking, you know, you must get in the heads of teenagers a lot, but what would you like to tell your teenage self or teenagers out there through your books, I guess?
I think the thing for me is when I'm writing YA, I'm not like, when I start writing a book, I'm never deliberately like trying to get that message across or a message across. It always ends up accidentally coming out throughout the characters, what they're going through, their flaws, their battles, and ultimately their transformations. And so I suppose for me, I was so hard on myself as a teenager. Mm. And it's one of those lessons you don't realize until you're in your 20s and probably even more so until my 30s, you know, looking back and thinking, my goodness, like I was so hard on myself. I was doing my absolute best. And I think it's really common for a lot of people to have been like that when they were younger as well. One of my favorite things to write for all age groups is the underdog. You know, I just love to write different types of underdogs. And I love testing them and challenging them. And I think this book kind of really, not so much deliberately, but has this underlying thread of the power of being yourself and kind of trying to live life to the fullest in a way. Everyone's going to make mistakes, and that doesn't mean it's going to be the end of your life.
Yeah, or that it defines you.
That it defines you, because there is a lot, there is a real big element when you're in year 12. Oh gosh, the pressure I was putting on myself when I was in year 12, of thinking that every single thing mattered. And it obviously was extraordinarily important. However, we all know now that there are so many pathways and so many different ways you can pick yourself up, you know, recalibrate, get back on the horse. Yeah.
And reinvent too.
Reinvent and maybe rediscover like an even better path that you hadn't even let yourself imagine. And that was one of the really amazing things writing this. I planned this book out. However, I had a lot of fun with each character, kind of taking them in directions that they kind of maybe never would have dreamt of at the start of the book, which was really, really true to life, I think.
I really like that idea of reinvention and rediscovery and coming of age. And I actually spoke to someone the other day and they said, well, aren't we always coming of age? So even as an adult, when you read YA, I think that's why it resonates, because you are always rediscovering or reinventing or trying. Well, I know I am trying to think, you know, how could I be a better person or a better mother or a better human being? So that's what I really think came through a lot in this book.
I love that you noticed that, because that has literally been this epiphany I've had about being a 30-something woman and writing YA. It's this connection of we're always going through firsts and challenges and rediscovering and reinvention. Absolutely. Like for me in particular, like personally, you know, I've moved towns, I've still like really dear friends like from other places, but I'm for the first time in 16 years having to put myself out there and make new friends in a new place. I feel like I'm in year 7 again, which I've never had that feeling for a very long time. And people always ask, you know, how do you get into that mindset if you're a 30-year-old woman writing for teenagers? And obviously there's a real element that comes from reading and meeting teenagers and all that kind of stuff. However, if you're really true to your authentic emotions, putting that into that young adult storyline, gosh, we're all just as riddled with the self-doubt and uncertainty and what am I going to be when I grow up? Like, that's something I still sometimes think, you know. I'm a mother of almost 2 and I still have that thought. So I don't know, there's like been a real beauty in accepting that you don't really know much anymore either. No. And that's part of the magic of it, you know.
No, it is. And I really like, you know, we're talking before about you can't say it went to plan, you know, that's just kind of describes life really. You know, you can plan as much as you can, as best as you can, and then something always comes up and you're like, oh right, okay, have to deal with that now.
Absolutely. And it's obviously something everyone's really gone through in the past year. And it was a fun topic to to explore while writing. Although I think most books would say for many of their characters that things aren't necessarily going to plan. That's where the magic of conflict comes into it. But this week I did set out on a bit of a mission to really stir the pot for them.
No, I did like that. And look, you explore friendship, particularly testing friendships. And I think that's a really important aspect of being a teenager. But I mean, you just mentioned you've moved far away and you're back in that space of finding friendships, you know, in your 30s. And that's a really interesting space to be too, isn't it?
Oh, it has been so fascinating. I've been really lucky in my life because I lived 3 years at university where you're living with people who become your second family. Then I fell into the media, which is filled with people of your own age and similar interests. And I was there for 13 years. So then they become your family. And so now I'm like back in my hometown of Wagga, which has been incredible. And I do have some of my old friends here, but it doesn't have that similar book scene or media scene that I'm used to. Like, obviously there is one here, but I'm not part of it yet. I'm just a little writer in her home office, you know, tapping away at the keys. So I'm like, how can I immerse myself in this world here? So it's been really interesting, and it has helped me to tap into some of the feelings I need to write these characters that tend to get in their head a bit too much about things, you know. Yeah. It's been helpful. I try to use life and the things that are affecting me in good and bad ways and use that in my writing. So it actually has been, it has been helpful. That's kind of my way of dealing with hard things.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting. I mean, I didn't move, but I think when, you know, your kids go to school, there's a whole new community of people that you can be friends with, you know, because you have lots of play dates and there's lots of parties. And I found it just really hard to go, how do I make friends as an adult? All my friends, you know, many of them are childhood friends or work friends, you know, which sort of happen organically. And you're like, how do I do this? And so it's a really interesting space as an adult because I don't know why we forget, because I say, see my kids at the park, they've made a best friend in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and as an adult, we kind of stop doing that. And I don't know why. It's interesting, isn't it?
I had this incredible experience meeting a new friend who has continued to be a friend a year and a half on. We met on a bus. Both with our young children with us, and this never would usually happen, but we somehow just clicked. We were talking about pop culture. We both admitted that at the time we couldn't drive, which we both can now, so hooray, but at the time we couldn't, and we swapped details, you know, and that could have been one of those crossroad moments where you never send the message or no one reaches out. But we did, and we've caught up, and we've basically caught up almost every week since. And it was a really lovely reminder, because there's elements in Can't Say It Went to Plan where people are kind of having these instant friendships and they're meeting new people and they're falling out with their old friends. And I was kind of questioning myself, like, is this believable? And I was trying to remember what happened for me when I went to schoolies. And it is like, sometimes you just meet people you click with straight away. Like with this particular girl, woman, it makes me feel young even doing it. With this particular woman, it was a case of we were like kindred spirits. We could have known each other for 10 years. Within a month, she knew more about me than some people I've known for a really, really long time. So that was kind of like a really lovely reminder and a kind of a green light with some of the writing with Can't Say It Went to Plan. I was like, absolutely you can have these friendships on fast forward, especially when you've got fading friendships and then you might just meet that person who in this new season of life is right for you. But that doesn't obviously take away from your deep long-term friendships either. It's just really amazing. I call it your friendship light, where like someone else has their friendship light on at the same time. And it's rare in a country town. Mm. So it's like when it happens, it's amazing. The friendships were one of my favorite things to write in the book.
I think that comes through for sure. But I was talking in another conversation about your platonic soulmate. And I just love that idea, because we always talk about soulmates as romantic, you know, that's not very imaginative, but I really like that you can have platonic soulmates in the world who, like you said, you just click, you just get each other, you just have lots in common, and you know, you think, oh, this is my platonic soulmate. Like, I love that idea.
Oh, that's lovely. I think of people like that as well. Mm. I call them like my people, or we have like a soul connection. That's kind of how.
Totally.
Yeah. And some people just get you. Absolutely. And the older we get, the more we go, okay, I'm definitely not for everyone. And that's right. Okay.
That's okay. That's all right. Now, I really liked, you know, we were talking before about, you know, being a parent. And, you know, I spoke to Jack Heath about this as well. So the impact of parenting. And, you know, we talked about writing in snatches. How has, I mean, you know, you are very close to having your second baby. How has this informed or changed you as a writer?
It's been the most interesting experience, to be honest. I'm just, for context, before I fell pregnant the first time, I had convinced myself that my writing life would, you know, go down in flames once I had children, despite the evidence of the contrary. You know, like there's so many incredible women who, and men who are parents who write. However, I just had my blinkers on. I think I was in such a set routine with how I was doing things. I just couldn't comprehend how I would possibly make it work. However, I would say that I am more calm, more focused, more sure of what I'm wanting to do with my writing now since becoming a mum. So my daughter is almost 3.5 now, so it's been a process. And I'm not talking about in that first newborn bubble, of course. I didn't have a brain cell to use then, but your brain comes back. I have learnt some really incredible lessons, like about what works for me. And obviously, disclaimer, this is all that's just been for me. It's different for everyone, just like everyone's writing process is. But the first one came from just accepting that every single book, children or no children, for me comes with a different writing process. Like, it's often one of the first questions we get asked when we're interviewed and when people are wanting to learn or become a writer themselves. It's asking, you know, what's your writing process? How do you make this happen? Everyone wants that one quick stop, you know, silver bullet answer. And I think in my earlier career, I thought I had it. I thought I had my formula. And now I know it's different every time, different seasons of life. So as a parent, I had to say farewell to my beloved control freak, you know, writing, not every day, but writing extremely regularly at a very set time of morning. I'd get up very early and do it before work or do it before whatever the plans were for the day. Now, oh my goodness. I think I had about 6 months of being able to do that when my daughter was around 2. She was sleeping beautifully. The minute she moved into a bed of her own, forget it. I have not written in the morning for a long time. Yeah. So I've had to just adapt. And I'd heard people talk about it who I like to gather information and try to learn from other people as well. And I'd heard people talk about how, yeah, you write in the cracks. Yes. I didn't quite get what that meant until I had to experience it for myself. Mm-hmm. And it really does make you more focused. Like, and it's not to say I don't still sit around procrastinating and daydreaming when I shouldn't and that type of thing. Like, I hear some people say they don't do any of that anymore. I'm like, well, I still definitely faff around a lot and overthink everything. But when I have a specific project that I'm very passionate about, I will bring it as high up the priority list as I can. Obviously, it can't trump everything anymore, but to carve out that time for myself. But a lot of it does come from having supportive village around you. And like, it's just something you can't pretend isn't part of it. Like, if I didn't have a partner that was supportive in that way, and, you know, that would be really, really challenging for me to pull off. And I know that would be the case for a lot of other writers as well. But you just find funny ways to do things. Like, so with Can't Say It Went to Plan, I remember when we first moved to the new house, daycare wasn't happening yet because we just moved. I couldn't get the daycare days, and she only goes 2 days anyway. But I remember using her big easel in the playroom to brainstorm. I, like, she was playing with a toy on the floor. I had her crayons and was mapping out this the storyline for the three characters and making sure that their arcs were different enough. And I took a photo of it at the time just to remind myself of just the kind of creative ways you come up with to adapt to the situation. And I also, another big thing for me as well is I used to think I needed like an entire day to work on my writing. So I, you know, would block out all this time, these huge amounts of time. But then when I was truly honest with myself, you'd realize I was wasting half of that time, you know, on Twitter or stressing about it or whatever, eating, whatever it happened, making endless cups of tea, which is certainly, I still do that. But now I know it's like I'm better off to have a few hours or an hour or at best, at most, like a half day to really just focus. And then you have the rest of the day to do everything else you need to do and everything else you want to do. Yeah. Like I think that's why I'm enjoying it more now, because I had that epiphany moment however many years ago where I realized I'm so much more centered and so much more happier where I'm making sure that all the different cups are being filled, not just writing. Like it's obviously a huge passion for me. I feel more like myself when I'm doing it, but my mental health, my contentment, my happiness, my connections with other people absolutely required me to take a bit of a step back and go, okay, how can I make this a bit more balanced?
No, I like all of that. And I think, you know, when you do become a parent specifically, I mean, that's what we're talking about, you do use time probably more effectively than before. You know, I remember how busy I thought I was before I had children, and I think, wow, I had a lot of spare time back then, which I don't think I did a lot with, except maybe just watched, you know, television. And so now when you know how precious time is and how fleeting it is, you know, every child's birthday is kind of, you know, I think as a mother you're grieving a bit going, oh, my baby's gone, you know how precious time is, and so you try and, you know, use it very resourcefully, I think.
Oh yeah, and you just come up with, you just stop, precious is the word. You stop being precious about so many things. I remember when I was...
Kids certainly humble you, Gab.
They humble you so much, and you, it, in a way, it's almost like it forces you to think outside the box in how you can pull it off. If you really want to do this, it's like, how can you make this work? And not in a way that puts pressure on you, more in a way that will fit into your current reality. So I remember there were times I'd be like sitting in a dark room trying to get my little one to sleep because she wasn't the biggest fan of it. So you'd just be sitting in there, there'd be the white noise going, you're half asleep, she's half asleep, no one's actually asleep.
Yep.
And I'd end up emailing myself random ideas. Like I solved quite a few plot problems, you know, just in the dark because you don't have anything else to think about.
Yeah.
Same goes with, you know, mindlessly walking around the pram, you know. So I would hate to never have my phone on me because it would be so handy to be able to email myself. So I ended up having to set up all these folders where I could just file away all these random thoughts I was having that I honestly have come back to. I originally had the idea for Can't Say It Went to Plan years ago. So it's trying to accept that you can't do everything at once.
Yeah.
And so it's not like my creativity has died since becoming a parent. If anything, it's firing on all cylinders. My biggest challenge now is that time and also energy.
Yes.
I don't have the capacity to pull the all-nighters or stay up late or even wake up super early unless I'm getting jumped on by a toddler.
Which is most mornings, probably.
Which is most mornings. And you try just to accept that that's the reality and that future you will eventually get that time. And I'm just trying to trust in that.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And then you still need time just for yourself to do nothing, you know. Like I try and schedule that time in, you know, after the kids have gone to sleep and maybe I've recorded a podcast, just to have that time where I sit with a tea and a limp ball and just do whatever I want, you know, whether it's read or just sit there, whatever it is, you need that space for yourself. And I think that makes, I know it makes me a better person and a less cranky person if I carve out that space for myself.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that my personality has shifted a little bit since having my daughter. Like I'm quite an extroverted person for a writer, I suppose, in the sense that I do crave being around people and I really miss people. That being said, I also love being by myself to work. It's just like I love being around people on my own terms, I guess.
I think that's most of us, though, to be honest.
Yeah. Since becoming a parent for me, I think I've actually become a little bit more introverted. I'm quite an extroverted person, especially for a writer. However, yeah, I just need much bigger blocks of time where I'm not getting just constant input from other people, yep. which is a new experience for me. Like I do kind of seek it out a lot, whether it's from real humans or from books, film, podcasts, music, everything. But now I just crave this quiet and stillness much more than I ever have.
But it's a real thing. It's called, especially if you're a, you know, a parent with young children, and you know, I was breastfeeding for quite a long time, and you get sensory overload. Because I remember when I'd put my kids to bed, I honestly, if I could have levitated, I would have, because I didn't want anything touching me, including the lounge. And I thought it was just me, but then I started doing some reading, and it's actually a thing where you can have sensory overload and have, you know, just need to have people not touching you for a while to get back to zero. So I found that really interesting. So I think maybe as a parent of young kids, you know, you feel that more than maybe you did when you didn't have them.
Yeah, probably. That's and I'm a pretty sensitive person as it is, so that all makes sense. I just try to include, I've tried my best to like include the creativity into our everyday lives. So I feel like I'm not missing out too much. And obviously it's not the same. It's not like I'm able to go for the late boozy drinks that I would usually in the city with writers and that type of thing. However, like growing up with my little one, I'd take her to the art gallery or, you know, those types of things where you're kind of still seeking out things that are feeding your creative soul. You might not be getting words on the page, but hopefully something's kind of marinating away. And that'll eventually spark for you later on.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. We spoke to Valerie Koo the other day, who said you should take yourself on creative dates. And I really liked the idea of just going, you know, by yourself or with a little human or something, just to the museum or, you know, to the theatre or whatever, just to sort of soak up that creativity so you can sort of use that later. I liked that idea.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of those as well. It's from Julia Cameron's The Artist Way, like doing artist dates. So, yeah, I've been doing those for a number of years as well. I don't manage to get one in every week. Like her vision is one a week.
That would stress me out. So maybe one a month.
Yeah, and it's more I usually hit a point where I feel out of whack and I'm like, something's not right here. I'm missing something. I obviously haven't been nurturing that part of myself enough. And that's often when I will try to steal away. It's tricky, obviously, just due to logistics, but try to steal away for either a couple of hours a day, sometimes even overnight, and just try to refill the cup, journal. I'm someone that gets a lot of benefit out of writing things with pen and paper to work out where I'm at in life, not so much with creative writing, but just general writing to then get me back on track. And I usually come back from those little mini breaks, even if it's just half a day or a few hours in the library by myself, being able to think. and I come back so much happier, so much more fulfilled, more focused, and kind of ready to tackle my next creative project. But without those, I am floundering.
Yeah, that's true. And then you're trying to multitask, and you know, I think we all know multitasking, even if we say we can do it, we probably don't do it very well. So it's about, you know, just having those, carving those spaces out for you, so when you know you're with your kids, you're present with them, and when you're doing your writing, you're present with that, and you're not trying to do everything at once, because it's impossible. Even though it might look like it on Instagram, Gab, that we can do everything, we really can't. Well, I can't. I'm speaking for myself.
I certainly can't. And I think we all know that none of us are finding the juggle of life easy, yet it is easy to forget that when you look at other people's Instagrams as well.
That's why these chats are really important, these really honest conversations. I mean, we were talking before, my daughter's sick and she's sleeping on the floor when we're podcasting, which is not unusual. But for the previous conversation I had, she was on my lap the whole time and I was on mute for most of the time because she was breathing really heavily. So you just kind of adjust, just get really creative and you just keep doing what you do.
The juggle is real. It's like getting flashbacks to having my daughter in a carrier when I was in a baby carrier while I was standing up and editing must have been the final manuscript of Melody Trump.
I love those carriers though, aren't they great? Oh,
there's a photo of it and her little eyes are peeping out, just looking so unimpressed and confused about what's going on. And
what are you doing?
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm kind of bracing myself because I'm going to have to recalibrate and come up with a new way of a new plan. And I've had a few people ask me, how are you going to do it? And I'm kind of far enough along the journey now to realize that I kind of have to wait till I'm in it to see what it's all about.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise it's putting too much pressure.
It is. And people talk about scheduling a baby, but really, you know, you can't really. You can try, but they'll just do whatever they want.
It was something that actually set me up for failure. I'd spoken to quite a few female writers before I had my first daughter who did manage to work around their baby. So their babies slept for 4 hours a day, you know, 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. I heard that, and someone with zero experience around young children, I was like, oh, cool, I'll do that. Easy, great. And then I had my gorgeous daughter who loved to sleep for 8 minutes.
Oh, really?
And then wake up and be very upset. And then, yeah, it was cat. And then eventually the most you'd stretch it to would be half an hour. Mm-hmm. And in a period of time like that, I'd collapse for that amount of time. And then, she's up again. So I've learnt my lesson. This time I'm going to wait to see who my little one is and then we'll go from there.
And everyone's experience is different, you know, because you get a lot of advice when, you know, you first have a child, and I had, you know, my first child never slept either. So slept more than 8 minutes though. So, you know, I'm not going to complain anymore. Not much more. And you get a lot of advice, but I think you just have to go with, you know, the children that you have and your situation, and you'll work it out your own way, because what works for, you know, the people next door doesn't always work for you, because your family's different, your kids are different, everyone, you know, reacts differently. That's okay. But you're right, in I think there's a sense of guilt there was on my part when I thought, you know, why isn't my baby sleeping like everyone else is sleeping? Like, I must be doing something wrong. But when you can let go of that and go, no, this is just my experience, it's very freeing.
100%. And I definitely won't be setting myself up for failure this time. No. Expecting myself to be working on, you know, new projects, even though I do have two ideas that I'm really in love with at the moment. My only thing that I have planned to do is to kind of let them simmer away. And like I was talking about before, think about them, you know, while I'm doing the dishes, while I'm walking the pram, that type of thing. But it's not about getting my butt at a computer. Mm. It's about letting myself daydream and think and noodle about it all, and write down everything that comes to me that I think could work, because future me can then come back to that email folder and dive in, and there'll be something to start, because I really do get scared about a blank page. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of my way of making sure that by the time I do face the blank page, I'm kind of armed with plenty of material.
Of ideas, And, you know, the newborn, as you know, the newborn little babies, it feels like a really long time every day, but then you look back and it disappears so quickly. So you want to try and enjoy what you can of it as well.
Absolutely. And our daughter is such a voracious reader already. She's such a little bookworm. And so it's amazing to kind of see how early that can start. Yeah. And I'm really wanting to show her, I don't know, the process of it all. You know, the other day she asked me though, like, how do you write books? And I swear my brain just went blank. I was like, oh gosh, I don't even know.
I don't know.
Yeah. But it's important. Like, it's not something that I want to, you know, stop doing. It's more I just have to change how I do it.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll find your way, because you did before, and it'll all work out in its own way. Now, I think I've asked you, Gab, why you write, but now I want to ask you, why do you keep writing?
Interesting question. I keep writing because there is something in me that won't let me stop. there's certainly been periods of life where it's been harder to write, and I've almost wondered, oh gosh, would my life be more easy breezy if I wasn't a writer, if I got a bit more of a standard job and, you know, did your standard 9 to 5, would I be happier? And in those moments, if I haven't written for too long, if I've left the writing like for too long, I start to go a little mad and I don't feel like myself, like I literally feel lost. Then the minute I come back to the page, and I just feel so much more grounded. So that's why I've discovered the power in those little sessions where I just get a bit of time to myself to kind of check in, see where I'm at. So the reason I write is because I don't feel like myself if I'm not writing.
That's a lovely answer.
I love to tell stories and entertain as well, but for completely selfishly, it's something in me that, whether I'm to do it professionally or otherwise, I do feel lost if I'm not doing it.
That's a lovely answer. And I loved this book, Can't Say It Went to Plan. I think it's the title of everyone's autobiography. So it was a beautiful, beautiful novel. And, you know, I love picking up your work because I've always enjoyed all of your books, Gab. I love your writing style. And I love how you get really deep into the friendships and the characters. So I enjoyed this just as much as all the others. And I was really looking forward to it. And it's such a beautiful cover too. I can see them all behind you. It's just so gorgeous. So
I did get very lucky with another gorgeous cover. Yeah, I feel like beautiful. I've been really spoilt by HarperCollins. Mm-hmm. I feel like it really captures the mood of it all and the girls. So yeah,
it's lovely. Yeah. And what I've enjoyed even more is our conversation, because we always do these lovely tangents where I think we kind of forget we're recording and just chat about life. But that's what literature is, isn't it? It's little capsules of life and experiences. So thank you so much for your time, Gab. I know time is very precious for you at the moment. So thank you very much.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.